Welcome to The Kinked Wire, the interventional radiology podcast from SIR Publications. You can learn more on our website, sirweb.org/kinkedwire. This episode provides audio abstracts of papers published in the April 2024 issue of SIR's Journal of Vascular and Interventional Radiology. You can find the full papers on jvir.org. My name is Manbir Singh Sandhu, and I'm your host for this episode.
Hello, my name is Dhanush Reddy, and I'm a postdoctoral research fellow at the Massachusetts General Hospital, Boston. I will be reading the abstract titled Genicular Artery Embolization, a Review of Essential Anatomic Considerations by Liu and colleagues. Genicular artery embolization is increasingly recognized as a safe and effective treatment option for symptomatic knee osteoarthritis and recurrent hematuria after total knee arthroplasty. Genicular arteries are an essential contributor to vascular supply for the knee joint and demonstrate considerable variability. Familiarity with the anatomy and common variations is critical for pre-procedural planning, accurate target selection, and minimizing adverse events in transarterial embolization procedures. This review aimed to provide a detailed discussion of the genicular artery anatomy that is relevant to interventional radiologists performing genicular artery embolization.
Hello, my name is Ashwin Mahendra, and I am a third-year medical student at the Florida Atlantic University Charles E. Schmidt College of Medicine. I will be reading the abstract titled Local Regional Therapies for Hepatocellular Carcinoma Prior to Liver Transplant, Comparative Pathologic Necrosis, Radiologic Response, and Recurrence by Mosendahl and colleagues. Purpose: to compare pathologic tumor necrosis rates after local regional therapies for hepatocellular carcinoma, or HCC, prior to liver transplantation, and evaluate radiologic pathologic correlation along with post-transplant HCC recurrence. Materials and methods: consecutive patients with solitary HCC bridged or downstaged with local regional therapies from 2010 to 2022 were included. Local regional therapies were transarterial chemoembolization, radioembolization, ablation, and stereotactic body radiotherapy. Upfront combination therapy options were transarterial chemoembolization with ablation and transarterial chemoembolization with stereotactic body radiotherapy. Subsequent therapy crossover due to local recurrence was allowed. Post-treatment imaging closest to the time of transplant, explant histopathologic necrosis, and tumor recurrence after transplant were reviewed. Results: 73 patients met inclusion criteria, of whom 5 required downstaging. Radioembolization alone and multimodal therapy resulted in significantly greater pathologic necrosis compared with transarterial chemoembolization alone. High-dose yttrium 90 radiation segmentectomy and transarterial chemoembolization with ablation showed the highest rates of complete pathologic necrosis of 63% and 71% respectively. Patients with complete pathologic necrosis had a mean lesion size of 2.5 centimeters, compared with 3.2 centimeters in those without complete pathologic necrosis, irrespective of local regional therapy modality. HCC recurrence was more common in patients without complete pathologic necrosis than in those with complete pathologic necrosis, 16% versus 3% respectively, with a p-value of 0.11. Using LIREDS, a non-viable imaging response was 75% sensitive and 57% specific for complete pathologic necrosis. Conclusions: radiation segmentectomy and multimodal therapy significantly improved complete pathologic necrosis rates compared with transarterial chemoembolization alone. A LIRADS treatment response of non-viable did not confidently predict complete pathologic necrosis.
Hello, my name is Alina Khalil, and I'm a second-year medical student at Nova Southeastern University Dr. Kiran Patel College of Osteopathic Medicine. I will be reading the abstract titled Feasibility Study of Transarterial Chemotherapy Followed by Chemoembolization for Recurrent Breast Cancer by Horry and colleagues. Purpose: to assess the treatment response to transarterial chemotherapy followed by chemoembolization for locally recurrent breast cancer. Materials and methods: 39 women with locally recurrent breast cancer after standard therapy underwent selective intraarterial chemotherapy followed by embolization using drug-eluting microspheres for locally recurrent tumors and axillary lymph node metastasis. Tumor response and toxicity were assessed by the response evaluation criteria in solid tumors and common terminology criteria for adverse events, and survival was evaluated by the Kaplan-Meier method. Results. The local responses of breast tumors at 3 and 6 months were as follows: complete response in 5.1% and 7.2%, partial response in 35.9% and 67.8%, stable disease in 59% and 21.4%, and progressive disease in 0% and 3.6%, respectively. All adverse events were mild and did not require treatment. The median overall survival was 46.5 months, and the overall survival rates for 1 and 2 years were 81.4% and 69.2%, respectively. The size of recurrent tumors and axillary lymph node metastasis did not impact prognosis, but both liver and bone metastasis adversely affected survival. Conclusions: transarterial chemotherapy followed by chemoembolization may provide a favorable tumor response in patients with locally recurrent breast cancer in whom conventional therapy has failed.
Hello, my name is Hannah Curtis, and I am a third-year medical student at Loma Linda University School of Medicine. I will be reading the abstract titled "Safety and Technical Feasibility of Percutaneous Renal Cryoablation of Central Tumors Without Pyeloperfusion" by Pigg and colleagues. Purpose: to assess the safety and technical success of percutaneous cryoablation, or PCA, without pyeloperfusion in 94 patients with central renal tumors. Materials and methods: a retrospective review of all central renal tumors treated by PCA without pyeloperfusion was performed. Central tumors were defined as those involving the renal sinus fat on pre-procedural cross-sectional imaging. Patient demographics and baseline tumor characteristics were recorded. The details of the PCA procedure, primary and secondary technical success, rates of local recurrence, adverse events or AEs, cancer-specific survival, or CCS, and overall survival, or OS, were compiled. Results: 94 patients consisting of 48 females with a mean age of 68.2 years with 94 central renal tumors were included. The mean maximal tumor diameter and mean renal nephrometry score were 37 millimeters and 8, respectively. Primary technical success was achieved in 94% of procedures. Of the patients who did not achieve primary technical success, three underwent successful repeat PCA. The other three patients were surveyed for residual disease. 24 patients required hydrodissection during PCA. Six patients experienced major AEs after PCA, including hemorrhage requiring embolization, hemorrhage requiring transfusions with admission, and perinephric abscess necessitating drain placement. 22 patients experienced minor AEs. Nine patients experienced local recurrence during the follow-up period. OS was 94%, whereas CSS was 98% during the study follow-up period. Conclusions: PCA of central renal tumors appears to be safe with high rates of technical success, even without the use of pyeloperfusion.
Hello, my name is Melissa Millette, and I am a fourth-year medical student at St. George's University. I will be reading the abstract titled "Transarterial Embolization for Adhesive Capsulitis of the Shoulder: Midterm Outcomes on Function and Pain Relief" by Lanciego and colleagues. Purpose: to determine the safety and potential effectiveness of transarterial embolization for adhesive capsulitis of the shoulder. Materials and methods: this prospective study analyzed consecutive adult patients with adhesive capsulitis referred for embolization between January 2018 and May 2023 after a poor response to treatment persisting for greater than 3 months after having completed at least 6 or more weeks of analgesics and physical therapy. Different types of pain and mobility were measured before embolization and 1, 3, and 6 months after embolization. Overall upper limb function and patient satisfaction were measured before and 6 months after embolization. Long-term follow-up comprised telephone interviews and clinical history reviews. Results: a total of 20 patients, 60% women, were included. 6 patients had diabetes, and 15 were off work. Median duration of symptoms before embolization was 39.4 weeks, and the median duration of rehabilitation therapy was 12.8 weeks. 6 months after embolization, significant improvements were observed in nocturnal pain, pain on moving, external rotation, internal rotation, active flexion, passive flexion, active abduction, passive abduction, and overall function. Despite objective improvements, patient satisfaction was nearly unchanged. Only one patient experienced a mild adverse event. Conclusions. Transarterial embolization is safe and potentially effective in treating adhesive capsulitis of the shoulder refractory to conventional treatment. Clinical improvements were maintained in the mid to long term.
Hello, my name is Maximilian Denis, and I am a current second-year medical student at the University of California Riverside School of Medicine. I will be reading the abstract titled Effectiveness and Safety of Large Bore Aspiration Thrombectomy for Intermediate or High-Risk Pulmonary Embolism by Jahangiri and colleagues. Purpose: to evaluate the effectiveness and safety of large bore mechanical thrombectomy of intermediate or high-risk pulmonary embolism, or PE, and factors associated with effectiveness. Materials and methods: a retrospective review of 257 patients with intermediate or high-risk PE who underwent mechanical thrombectomy using the FlowTriever system between July 2019 and November 2021 was conducted. Data were analyzed using the linear regression and Kaplan-Meier methods with a type 1 error set at 0.05. Results: patients' mean age was 62 years and 51% were male. PE risk was classified as high, intermediate high, and intermediate low in 37, 201, and 18 of the patients, respectively. Procedural technical success was 100%. The mean pulmonary artery pressure decreased from a mean of 32 millimeters of mercury before to 24 millimeters of mercury after thrombectomy. Immediate complications occurred in 2% of the patients. Post-procedural 30-day and all-time PE attributable mortality in a mean of 1.3-year follow-up was 2% and 6%, respectively. In a multivariate analysis, the presence of lower extremity DVT at presentation and a higher pre-thrombectomy mean pulmonary artery pressure were associated with lower degrees of decrease in mean pulmonary artery pressure in the intermediate high-risk PE group. Among 14 patients with post-thrombectomy PE attributable mortality, 13 had post-thrombectomy mean pulmonary artery pressures of greater than 20 millimeters of mercury. Conclusions: large bore aspiration thrombectomy is a safe and effective treatment for reducing pulmonary artery pressure in patients with intermediate or high-risk PE. Post-thrombectomy mean pulmonary artery pressures of greater than 20 millimeters of mercury might indicate post-thrombectomy PE attributable mortality in high-risk patients.
Hello, my name is Jacob Knittel, and I'm a third-year medical student at Creighton University School of Medicine, Phoenix Regional Campus. I'll be reading the abstract titled Percutaneous Management of Dialysis Access Steal Syndrome, Interventions and Outcomes from a Single Institution's 20-Year Experience by Rigsby and colleagues. Purpose: to determine safety and effectiveness of percutaneous interventions performed by interventional radiologists at a single institution over 2 decades in patients with dialysis access steal syndrome, or DAS. Materials and methods: a retrospective review of 11,658 fistulograms from 2001 to 2021 was performed. In total, 286 fistulograms and 212 patients with surgically created dialysis accesses met inclusion criterion of fistulography for suspected DAS. Chart review collected data regarding patient demographics, comorbidities, access characteristics, fistulography findings, interventions performed, and outcomes. Procedures with and without DAS intervention were compared. Odds ratios adjusted for age, sex, comorbidities, access characteristics, and multiple within patient events were calculated using logistic regression to determine associations between steel intervention status and outcome variables, major adverse events, access preservation, and follow-up surgery. A percutaneously treatable cause of DAS was present in 128 out of 286 cases, Treatment of DAS lesions was performed in 118 cases. 15 embolizations were also performed in patients without DAS lesions. Results: technical success of DAS interventions, defined by the Society of Interventional Radiology reporting standard, was 94%. 54% of interventions resulted in DAS symptom improvement at a median follow-up of 15 days. Patients with steel intervention had 60% lower odds of follow-up surgery. There was no difference in major adverse events or access preservation between groups. Conclusions: in this retrospective cohort study, approximately half of DAS fistulograms revealed a percutaneously treatable cause of steel. Over half of DAS interventions resulted in symptomatic relief. Percutaneous intervention was associated with lower odds of follow-up surgery without compromising access preservation.
We'd like to thank everyone who helped with this episode. My name is Hannah Curtis, and I am a third-year medical student at Loma Linda University School of Medicine, and I was your audio editor. The research from this episode appears in the April 2024 issue of JVIR, and you can visit jvir.org for the full papers, other audio content, and much more.